Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today we're going to talk about making money. Specifically, how to turn the readers who are consuming your content into paying customers.
So it's interesting. I am going to be on a panel at FinCon, which is a personal finance conference founded by our friend PT. What does he go by now? PT, Phil, Philip?
I always call him PT. I've never called him Phil. It sounds awkward.
I know. It does sound awkward. Yeah. But then I noticed like on certain things, he's like Philip. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Founded by our friend PT. And I'm doing a panel this year on how to diversify your income. So we did a Zoom meeting yesterday with people on the panel just to kind of introduce ourselves, get to know each other. Because none of us, I don't think any of us knew each other before. And one of the ladies on the panel said, I had been blogging for all this time. I had been creating content. I had been creating these free printables. I'd been giving them away. And I was making $100 a month, I think is what she said. And then she said, I realized that I was still working my full-time job and I had to do something. I had to make a pivot because I couldn't just keep creating all this content and doing all this for free, basically, and still working a full-time 40-hour-a-week job. So basically, she decided to sell her printables instead of giving them away for free. And within under a year, she went from $100 a month to six figures in a year. So it got me thinking, how do you, you know, a lot of people are doing this, right? They've been creating content. They've probably been creating content for years and they're still not making a lot of money. So it got me thinking yesterday, how do you go from you've got the content, you're creating it, to getting those people to actually make a purchase from you or buy something that you're selling, a product, service, membership, whatever it could be?
I mean, the first thing you got to do is sell something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, just creating content isn't, and advertising, honestly, is not the way to go.
No. In fact, I said on the call yesterday, I said, the one thing that hit me is that you have to find something to sell that's scalable and you are not scalable.
Right.
So the content creation game is not scalable if it's just you. So the way you scale yourself is you take the information you have and turn it into a course so you can mass distribute it, or you do a membership site. But you personally, like, just think about sponsored content, right? Sponsored content is a great way to make money. And there are people that make a lot of money doing sponsored content, but you can only do so much sponsored content in a week or in a month or in a year. So at some point you cap out. If you create a course on how to get sponsored content deals, you don't cap out on that. You know, so you might be able to get, you know, $200,000 in brand deals a year, but you could probably make $1 million in course sales if you taught people how to do the same thing. Obviously, if you're an expert on it. I don't get into this thing where these people are like, we get this sometimes in the course. I want to create a website that teaches people how to make money online. And then we'll say, well, how do you make money online? Well, I'm going to teach a course on how to teach people how to make money online. So obviously you have to be an expert. But that's the one thing I got thinking about yesterday is you can't scale yourself. So you have to find something to scale, whether it's services, products, digital product. It doesn't matter. Even, you know, paid content. But you can't do this just you selling you.
This is just an aside. You know what I hate about sponsorships? Is that
what?
The whole negotiation process takes longer than the actual work itself.
Yes.
And by then, I just don't want to do anything anymore.
Yes.
Anyway, so it doesn't really matter what you sell for today's topic, right? We're going to talk about how to convince people to open up their wallets. So I guess, hypothetically, let's just say you're selling like a digital product or a course. How do you get someone to actually buy it? And let's just say, for the sake of argument, that what you're selling is also being offered by like hundreds of competitors.
You just made that difficult.
No, but it's the same thing. The point is like, the reason why I said that is because most people go, oh my God, this is being sold by like 100 people already. Like, how am I going to stand out?
Okay, you want me to go first?
Yeah, sure, go first.
Okay, so the first thing I would start doing, especially if you've been doing this for free previously, so let's just take Printable Lady. She's been giving away her printables for years as lead magnets. I'm sure she has feedback about those printables. I'm sure people will email her and say, oh, thank you so much. This helped me, or I was able to do this. She actually sells spreadsheets, which I was like, that's like my like secret life goal is to learn how to sell spreadsheets because I'm so bad at them. I feel like if I was good enough to sell them, I'd be good at spreadsheets. But so I would start collecting those emails and feedback from people and start putting it on my website as testimonials. Because one of the ways that you can set yourself apart is to show success from other people. One of the reasons why I think our friend Michelle Gardner was so successful with her affiliate marketing course was that she literally had people saying, I took her advice, I did what she was telling me to do, and I went from making $500 a month to $50,000 a month. Well, you read that a couple of times and you think, well, if I could even go to $5,000 a month, I would be happy. So you probably already have testimonials from people who have been consuming your content. So take that. You might have to massage it a little bit. Don't lie, obviously. But you might have to like edit some of the content that their feedback they're giving you and start placing that on your site so that people know that it's it has a value more than free.
I would just email that person and ask for a video testimonial and say, oh, yeah, hey, here's some more printables for you for free or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about content creation. If you've been doing it a while and you have an audience, then you've been giving away stuff for free for such a long time that chances are your audience feels obligated to help you or buy from you.
Yes.
Right? Like I know if someone gives me something, like I always feel like I guess it's not really an Asian thing, but like people always come, like relatives and one of them, they give you all the stuff, they cook for you, and then you just feel obligated to do everything they tell you to do, which is what ends up happening.
It's why the restaurants at the mall give, well, probably not anymore post COVID, but like Costco, everyone gives those free samples, right?
Yep.
So you go and you, like, I take the little tortellini cup at Costco and the bag is right behind that little old lady. And she's like, don't you want to buy the tortellini? And I'm like, of course I do, because I just stole from you. So yes, it's very effective.
Or the charities who send out dollar bills.
Yes, or the little address labels.
Or the stamps, or the address labels, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
It works.
The point is that since you're already well set to, like, you might not think that people are going to spend money on you, but since you've given away stuff for free for so long, I'm willing to bet that people are willing to pay you money or even just donate to you for that matter.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So, I mean, Tony and I sell a course, and it's a higher ticket item. So to get someone to open up their wallets for a higher ticket item, you have to do a little bit more work. I would say one of the best ways to get people to open up their wallets on a course or a higher price item first is to establish authority. And once again, if you've been putting out content for long enough, chances are you already have authority. Like, you don't need any credentials. People are following you for a reason.
Another way you can sort of build your authority is give away a free sort of trial or chapter or module of what you're selling, because sometimes people think, oh, especially on a big ticket item, like, I don't know if I want to invest several hundred dollars if I'm not quite confident in what's going to be in the product or in the course or the membership. So you can always, you see this all the time where they're like, hey, you can do 1 month membership free, you know, or you can join for a dollar. And so what happens is people join and then a couple things happen. One, they see that what you're creating is really great, so they want to be a part of it and they want to, you know, actually pay. Or two, what happens a lot of times is people are just lazy and they don't cancel.
That's true. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not a tactic, but it's not like, that's not a tactic to convince people to buy from you, but it's another a tactic that works into turning people into actual customers.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about it this way. When you get people like consuming your content for so long, chances are you've been linked to by other publications. Mm-hmm. Also, you mentioned testimonials. You also want to just put down all the places where you've been mentioned. And chances are you've been mentioned in some popular outlets that people might recognize as well. All right. So the key really to getting people to open up their wallets, if you sell something that's super competitive, is to just get people to like you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think it's harder to do this with written content. I think it's much easier with like a podcast or a YouTube channel where people can see you and interact with, or see you and listen to you on video. That's why, like, if you have an email list, which everyone should have here, whatever you're emailing out, periodically you should send out some sort of video of yourself as well. Mm-hmm. At least with a course, people have to envision what it's like for you to teach to them. Right? Because you're not going to just throw them a novel and say, hey, this is what you need to learn.
And I think you have to let people know, because not all your audience is your customer, But typically, if they're already following you, they do like how you present the content. So what video does is just add another layer of convincing to people. There are people that I know that are very, very intelligent, and I know the information they have would be helpful to me, but their presentation style is just not mine. And so I would probably never buy a course from them because they're boring, or sometimes they're just too fluffy, or sometimes they're too straight, right? I have like a very weird medium that I need to have. I'm like the target, you know, I need to have like just everything just so. But I think I'm not a Walmart, I'm not a Macy's, I'm a Target. But I think giving the video to people, letting people see you talk, letting people see you interact, you can do this with YouTube, you can do it just embedding videos on your site, you can do it on Facebook, you know, TikTok, doesn't matter, Instagram, there's a million different ways to do this. That way people get to know you even better, they understand your style a little better than just your writing style, and a lot of times if people start liking you, they'll buy your course or they'll buy something from you just so they can get more time with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing, like where we were talking about information in courses, chances are, you know, if there's a whole bunch of other people that are teaching that same course, chances are your content overlaps, right? Mm-hmm. So the way you need to distinguish yourself is to just have your own style and just be yourself. Like, I think a big mistake that I made early on was trying to act like too straight-laced and just deliver the content instead of just saying what was on my mind, even though I stick my foot in my mouth pretty often, I think. But, people come to like those little quirks about you, and that's why they want to sign up with you.
Yeah. I mean, a perfect example of this is I really like Marie Forleo. Like, I like her style. I like how she talks, right? It's not like you don't like Marie Forleo.
No, I like her. Yeah.
But you probably wouldn't take a course from her because how she presents things is just not your vibe, right?
Yes.
So it's not, you know, I think there's that factor where you're going to get people that really connect with you and your personality. And then those people are much more likely to buy from you anyway.
Yeah, you know, there's two different types of buyers. Marie Forleo, the reason why I wouldn't buy anything from her is because I feel like it's all fluff. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, more fluffy. Whereas me, I'm an engineer, right? I want to see facts, figures. I would say more people fall into the Forleo camp, though, than what I would prefer.
Okay. Who knows, right?
Who knows?
There's a lot of people who are just the facts. No fluff.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that I think when people say, oh, well, there's already so many people out there doing this, or, you know, how I set myself apart, be you. One of my most favorite books in the world is The Most Powerful Woman in the Room is You by Lydia Finette. I'm totally messing up her name. Sorry. I read this book and it was like a life-changing book. And she is an auctioneer for Christie's. Is that the big auction house?
Yeah.
In New York?
Yeah.
And she does the charity auctions. And she started as like an intern. I mean, she kind of the classic, like, work your way up. Well, the first time she was tasked to do an auction, she basically copied the other big auctioneers, right? And she flopped, right? Because she was given this like golden opportunity to auction. Because this is like charity auctions. Like, everyone there is like mega, mega rich. And they want to spend their money because it's all – people are going there because they're donating for charity, right? So you have this like ripe field to sell to, and she gets up there and blows it because she was trying to mimic like her boss, right? Who was very straight laced. And after a couple times, she was like, I'm failing at this. And through a series of events, she realized, I've got to get up there and be me. I've got to pick on Joey Fatone from NSYNC or whoever, you know, New Kids on the Block in the audience. I've got to make jokes. I've got to do – she had to be her. Even though these people were, like, super wealthy and she was very intimidated, she's like, these people like to have fun just like everybody else. These people want to be entertained, and she's entertaining. And so she created her own style, and she's become one of the most successful female auctioneers solely because she just was like, I got to be me. And that was like the whole premise of the book is you're not – the way that you have power is to be yourself. And so stop trying to – you know, don't be the next Pat Flynn. Pat Flynn's already Pat Flynn. Don't be the next Gary Vee. There's already a Gary Vee. Be you. And when you do that, people will automatically resonate and connect with you because you can't be any more genuine than being yourself.
I made the same mistake when I first started blogging. I wrote content so that I wouldn't piss anyone off. So I never really gave my opinions on stuff. Plus, I had my wife who was reading my stuff and going, hey, you can't say that. That's going to piss off like half the population. So I would cut it out. My content didn't actually start taking off until I started putting down my opinions. And some were polarizing. I'm not a really polarizing person, but some of those were offended like a large community, which sent me hate mail. Yes. For
all press is good press, right?
Yeah, but it's stuff like that. And it wasn't even that harsh, in my opinion. But yeah,
well, Well, one of the things that I've noticed, and we talked about this yesterday, but you get a lot of people come up to you who listen to your podcast, and you have I wouldn't say it's weird because you are Asian, but you have a decent following of Asian guys, and they always come up to you and they relate to some Asian story, like Asian childhood story that you've told on the podcast. Like they all continue like, oh, my parents made me do this too. Or I went to this. And it's funny because like I see in their faces this, like they have this immediate connection with you because you have a shared experience with these people because of your upbringing and the culture, right? So everybody has shared experiences. Very few people are like, I feel like Ezra Firestone's one of the few people that are like, most people were not raised on a commune by hippies, right? Like that's probably one of the like rare, but yeah. Most people are like, oh yeah, my parents did this, or oh yeah, I had a single mom and we had macaroni and cheese every night, or, you know, oh, my parents both worked and, you know, whatever. Like everyone has a story that other people can relate to that they should weave into their content. Because the more people connect with you, they're just so much more likely. I mean, there are people out there that I would probably open my wallet for anything they sold, right? Because I feel so connected to them. But you don't get that way by being bland or not being yourself.
I mean, this is why it's important in your content to just throw out some random facts every now and then. So people know that I'm a Warriors fan. People know that I like tennis. Like if they want to get to know you, they'll just talk about the NBA.
Yep.
And the goal here is just find something where people can relate to you. And then that just makes you instantly more likable. So if someone came up to me and started like praising LeBron, I don't know how I'd feel. But if they started talking about Steph Curry, I'd be like, oh my God, I know. I'd instantly like that person a lot better.
Yeah.
So that is a way to just get more people on your bus. And again, it's just all about the likability factor, the relatability factor. Like you relate to Marie Forleo, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why you're willing to buy her things.
Well, whereas, she didn't have a similar growing up to me, but she had a lot of the same growing up experiences where she was like working at 16, like a lot of the hustling that like I felt like I did as a teenager, whereas a lot of my friends didn't have to have jobs and things like that. So I immediately, they're like, oh, you know what it's like. You didn't grow up with anything. So I grew up with a great family, but I didn't grow up with any money. And, you know, she kind of had the same situation. It's like, oh, you know what it's like to like work three jobs. And like immediately I'm like, oh, you get it. You get this life.
Yeah, totally. And that's why like, and I'm kind of partial to Asians too, especially like if they have like similar stories. So I know for me, I'm always willing to support someone who's Asian, who's starting out, even if they just reach out. Or the same thing, like if you went to school, if you went to college, like if someone comes up to you and say, hey, I'm an alumni of the college you went to, you're going to be much more likely to help them.
Yeah.
Or buy from them as well.
Yeah.
So let's see what else we got here. We talked about social proof. We talked about reciprocity. What about a trust is actually something that you establish with your content as well? I can't think of how this would work for printables, but for the course, I know that if you've helped someone already, mm-hmm. then that always establishes trust for what you're teaching as well. So one thing, let's say you're about to sell a course, you've put out content before, but you've never really taught anyone. So let's say you're selling a course for the very first time, and up until this point, you've just been putting out content. What I would do is I would just give a course to someone for free who you think is competent, and then just have them run through your content and kind of like have them as a guinea pig for your class. And that way, if you can get them to make their first dollar or be successful for whatever you teach, then you can use them as like a case study to establish trust with your readers when it comes time to sell something.
So one of my clients sells Bible studies, and if you're buying a Bible study, the perspective of the person writing the study is actually really important because people believe different things about the Bible. It's not all like the same. And so one of the things that she does to get trust with people to actually open their wallets is she gives them a free Bible study that basically so people can read it and go, oh, wait, my views do not align with you at all. Or my views do align with you based on how you present the material. And so that's actually been, that's one of her highest converting lead magnets, is because she's giving away this, and it's not the same as her full paid Bible studies, right? It's a shorter version. So it's not like she's giving away like the farm or anything, but it allows people to see how she writes, you know, the perspective that she teaches from, and they can decide what they want to purchase.
So I have a buddy who I interviewed on my podcast. His name is Kalyan, and he teaches SAT prep courses for kids. And I've taken a lot of SAT prep courses and I've studied a bunch, but he claimed that his course is fun and kids love it. So I was like, okay, fine. Yeah, whatever. Like, how can you make this fun? So he did the exact same thing as what you described. He gives away a free lesson that I took. And I was very amused. And granted, I'm not a kid, but it was funny enough that I know my kids would like it. And so we signed them up for that class. It's prepmedians.com. And again, it's the same thing. Like, people are not going to believe you oftentimes, but then you show them a sample and then that just opens the doors. Provide the sample's good, obviously.
Well, and I think that's, it also opens up the door. So you just basically promoted this guy, right? You just, you know, said, hey, I did this. It was actually amusing. I can remember I got a traffic ticket a long time ago. And in Florida, you can get points on your license or you can go to driving school. I don't know if this is how it is everywhere, but you can go to driving school and then you don't have any points on your license, which means your insurance rates don't go up in theory. So, you know, there's all these driving schools around town. Well, there's a couple that are like comedy driving schools, right? Because the driving school is literally the most boring thing you'll ever do. It's 4 hours of like watching DUI videos, even though you got a stop sign ticket, right? It's just total torture. So I took the comedy driving school. And this, it was like comedians ran the school. Like, they were funny. The 4 hours, like, I would have paid more to go. Like, it was almost like a show. And I, for years, every time I heard someone got a ticket, I'm like, oh, you got to do comedy driving school. It's so good. You got to do this one. This one's really funny. And I promoted it forever to anybody I knew that got a traffic ticket. So if you can get people, you know, if you can deliver on what you say and people are impressed, people will promote you anyway. I mean, I know so many people that promote your course because they've taken it and been successful from it that you still have to promote it, obviously, but they're doing the work for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And since we're talking about promotion right now, I think the best way to promote something is to give some sort of live presentation about it. And I think we've had a webinar podcast episode in the past, right?
Yeah, we have a couple.
But again, this falls under the same thing. Like, if people can see and hear you in a live interactive way where they can ask you questions, that's by far the best way to get someone to open up their wallets.
Okay. I was just, it made me think of something totally different.
So sure. Go for it.
So I was thinking about this because you said early on, you have to have something to sell. So let's just say you're creating content and you're still not quite sure what you want to sell. One way to get people used to opening their wallets is to do things like promote affiliate programs. So you're getting people used to buying from the things that you recommend, even if you don't have anything for yourself quite yet. So, you know, and obviously you don't want to promote someone that could potentially be a competitor to you, but even like just being more focused on using affiliate offers that are relevant with your brand and teaching people like it's okay to spend money with me so that when you then want to sell something to people, they will like jump on it. And the perfect example of this is our friend Laurie at Passionate Penny Pincher. For years, she had this content site and she pushed people to affiliate offers all the time. And so then when she decided to launch her own product of menu planning cards and planners and things like that, her people were already used to buying. When she said buy, they bought. So she just was now saying buy my stuff, you know. So it was a very easy transition for her to promote. And she still promotes affiliate offers as well. But it was very easy for her to like tell people to buy her stuff because she'd already been telling them to buy things. So I think that's another thing you can think about is if you don't really know exactly what you want to do yet, start just pushing people to spend money on quality things that you truly do recommend. And then when you have something to sell, they're more likely, you know, you haven't created this like, oh, well, everything here is free.
Yeah, I think if you can have some sort of product that you can offer for really cheap, maybe like under 10 bucks. I mean, what you're trying to do here is really just to get people used to opening up their wallets with you. And if they're willing to even just spend a dollar with you, that means they're much more likely to spend more money or on a higher ticket item later on down the line. My buddy, Mike Jackness, what he does is he gives away a physical book. You just have to pay for the shipping. So it ends up being like $5. And then people read that book and then they're much more likely to sign up for the full course.
Interesting. I didn't know he gave away a physical book.
Yeah, he gives away a physical book. What I started doing recently is whenever I give a workshop now, I'll sell the recordings for cheap and maybe like a group consult. And then those people are now pre-vetted to as potentials for buying the full course later on down the line.
So I think another thing to think about, and we hear this objection too, is, well, what I want to sell is already all over the internet, right?
Yep.
So you can Google this. And I've seen people say this in your webinars. We're like, well, couldn't I just Google all this information as opposed to paying for it? And I think another way to get people to buy from you is to take the information and organize it in such a way where you're basically guiding people through the steps. So you make stuff so easy to consume and digest and so laid out for them that it's kind of a no-brainer for them to purchase it rather than continue to get it for free. Because a lot of times what people are selling is content that they could probably get by reading your website for 5 years, you know? But
people aren't going to do that.
Yeah. Right. People aren't. So if you can give it to them in very easy to digest nuggets, they're more likely to buy. And then on top of that, you want to include, I think something important is to include something that's not available for free. So like one of the things that we do and that you do is we do office hours every week with our course. And so, you know, it doesn't have to be a live teaching. We do live teaching. It could be a private Facebook group. It could be something where people have access to something that's not available just on the web.
Our buddy, Darren Rouse, he literally put together a book of his blog posts unchanged.
Yep.
And he sold those. And I think he did really well. I don't remember the exact numbers for that. But he basically organized all the blog posts on his site, of which he has thousands.
Yes.
And so people bought it. I don't know if I could pull that off, actually. Maybe I could, maybe I couldn't.
I mean, is this the one where he spent like 30 minutes every morning for like 6 months putting it together and then had it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do it if you just dedicated like a block of time.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, he sells other programs as well. And that was one of his cheaper products, which probably led into something much bigger as well.
Well, that's a good point is, and you mentioned this a little bit before, but if you aren't quite sure what to do, start with something cheap. Because start with something cheap and less information or less content. And then from that, you will probably be told by your customers what they want. So they'll say like, oh, this is great. I wish it had this, or I would love to know about this. And so you don't even have to do any work at that point. People are telling you exactly what they want.
Yeah, totally. And then you mentioned earlier, like one of people's major objections is the fact that, you know, this material can be found freely on the web, but that other material that's freely on the web was not created by you. It's a similar principle to like having a brand, right? Except it's a personal brand. Like, why do we buy Tide detergent? I'm sure there's like thousands of other alternatives that work just as well.
Bill D'Alessandro would say there is.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Right. Or why do I buy like Rode mics, or why do I like, you know, Sony or whatever? Why do people like Apple? I mean, it's a brand thing, even though I like Android better. But it's the same principle. Another thing that actually helps people open up their wallets is giving them like a timeline to actually open up their wallets. Because if you tell me like, hey, I'm offering this thing and there's no time associated with it, I might be like, okay, you know, maybe I'll buy that later on down the line. But if you want to get people open up their wallets, you give them a reason to buy now. And the best way to do this is to give some sort of real deadline. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not fake. So I guess the easiest way to do this is to give some sort of discount when you're launching your new product. Like, let's say, hey, maybe the first 20 people get a 50% discount on this product or something like that. But you're giving them some sort of deadline, and then the price goes up after like 3 days.
Something that was really effective with me was that, you know, I found out about Marie Forleo, I think from Aaron Chase from $5 Dinners, and started follow. Well, I found out about her like the day before B School closed. So she sells a product called B School, which is basically business school. She only opens it once a year. You can only sign up within a 10-day period. And then it's basically like this 6-week boot camp. So if you don't sign up in those 10 days, you can't get into B School. Well, I found out about it like the day before it was closing, and it's a $2,000 product, info product. So that's not an impulse purchase for me. That is I need to really think about this for a very long time, agonize, ask Steve 17 times if I should do it, and then make a decision. And it was just, I didn't have enough time to really make a decision. But you better believe I spent the next 11 months and 15 days thinking that I was going to do B School. And like, you know, I think I even put it on my calendar. Like, I got to sign up. I got to figure out which affiliates have the best bonuses. And, you know, she runs a lot through affiliates. And I thought about that dumb B School for probably 9 months afterwards because I didn't get in, right? Because I just wasn't willing to commit at that point. But that's there's pros and cons to opening and closing your cart like that. I mean, I think we've talked about that on other podcast episodes, but it's very effective because I literally bought B School the day it opened the next year because that scarcity, it works.
Wow. I didn't realize you thought for like almost a year since you missed the.
Yeah. Well, I just wasn't like, at first I was like, I can't spend $2,000 on a course. That's insane.
Right.
I don't spend $2,000 on anything but kitchen appliances.
I was actually looking at my stats the other day, and I found like the people who purchased, they come to at least like 3 of my workshops typically before they sign on. Because I think maybe it's just for high ticket items, but similar to you, they're not ready to sign up. They have to see the material again, and it just takes time. I mean, the way I think about sales is you just got to wear people down until they capitulate oftentimes, right?
Well, so it's... Yes, you do have to wear people down, I think in a good way.
Yeah, in a good way, of course.
It's how you got your wife to marry you. We all know this. You wore her down. But I think especially, I mean, if you are selling a $17 product or, you know, you don't need to do any of this. Like people are just going to buy impulsively, right? If you get a good sales copy, you know, and some really nice graphics, you won't have a lot of trouble with this. But when you're looking at things that people have, like it's real money. I think you do have to start massaging your audience. And the other thing that I think is funny is that I see this with people who have been creating content for a long time for free. They are afraid to ask people to buy.
Yes.
Like kind of if you think about it, maybe, you know, if you're not doing anything else with your money, maybe you could just like, I don't know, think about buying something from me. It's like, no, buy now. Get a big button. Put it on there. I was actually on Chad Carson's site the other day, Coach Carson. He does real estate stuff. Yep. He's got great sales pages. It's like buy now buttons. There's like 40 of them. You cannot miss these buttons. I can't stand when I get to a sales page and I have to scroll for like 25 minutes to get to the button. Like give me the I'm already there. I want to buy. Like people are very afraid to ask. It's okay to ask people to do something for you. You've been giving them this content and this information for free for years and years and years usually. And these people like you. And if they don't want to buy, they'll just read something else. So I think it's important when you are trying to market to them that you do say, click on this link to buy, buy now, sign up, you know, be direct about it. Don't hem and haw. Don't beat around the bush.
You know, what's funny about that is like when Pat first started selling products, like he never sold products. He was always like an affiliate person.
Yes.
When he started selling, he got a lot of blowback from his audience because they weren't used to like paying for anything.
Yes.
But, you know, people get over it. And usually the people who shout the loudest are not like your entire audience. Those are just the people that shout the loudest.
Yeah. Well, and you think about it. Okay, so like I like Pioneer Woman. I like her recipes. They're really good. They're terrible for you, but like they're not healthy, but they're so delicious. And I've been making recipes on her website since probably 2009. Well, you better believe when she put out a cookbook, I bought the cookbook. Like, do I use the cookbook for any recipes? Probably not. I still go on her website. But it was kind of like I've been consuming your free recipes for 10 years, you know, or 6 years or however long it had been when I bought the cookbook. It's like, I want to support. And that's the thing. There are people, they want to support you. I see this with Laurie from Passionate Penny Pincher. When she promotes her own products, her fans are so loyal that they will say, I want to make sure what link I click on so that you get the money. You know, people do want to support you. I want to support the people that I've, you know, that have helped me. I want to be able to support them financially. So I think, yes, you will get some blowback from people because people are jerks and that's just life. But for the most part, you have to ignore that. It's the same people that leave the hateful comment and you get one hateful comment for the 100 positives. Just ignore that and keep going. And I think that there's a balance in that, you know, if you start selling things, whether it's products or services or memberships, you still have to continue to provide content for people. You know, you have your course, but you still put out content every single week for free and a podcast for free and a YouTube channel for free. So you're still providing free value and people never have to buy from you. They can just continue to consume the free content. And so I think the problem is that when someone turns from free content to like all they do is sell, and that's all, right. And everything's that, you know, and most people don't do that. But I think that's the idea that people have. It's like, no, you continue to do the same things you've always done, but now you weave in a little sales every once in a while.
I mean, this is the exact principle that Gary Vee covered in his book, Jab, 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 Right Hook. I think most people are a little squeamish about trying to charge people because they're just not sure. But if you've been doing your job correctly, putting out content and giving over the years, if you put out a product, people are just going to buy. If you find that people are a little hesitant to buy, then maybe you're just not ready yet, like for a cheap product, I'm saying. Because the power of the reciprocity and giving away free content, like it's the freemium model with like an app also, right? You're giving away free functionality, and then you might they'll charge you for a little bit of extra functionality or something like that. I mean, it's all the same principle. Like if you've given enough away, you will get that money back in time in terms of sales. It just always works. It's just a fundamental human trait that has always held true for anything.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.